Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. Today, I want my guest to introduce himself purely because I don't miss anything. So, and not to do him any injustice, I'd like you to welcome Jeremy. Hi.
Hi. So I'm Jeremy Rivera, longtime SEO, started in 2007, worked with a real estate website hosting company as a support tech, and people wanted to move their logo over an inch, and they wanted to make sure their email worked, and they kept asking, how do I rank better on Google? How do I get this? How do I sell homes? How do I get leads? This is worthless. Why am I paying money for hosting? I hate you. So to help with customer support, I started following Bill Slosky and Mark Traphagen and a number of other early figures in SEO. And I built a small blog called Foot and Mouth Disease. And I was so happy when I ranked on the first page for content writing advice. And the marketing team at the company found out that I was on the first page, and they made a ton of their own blogs and pushed me off of the first page out of spite. So then I really had to learn SEO and figured out, okay, I need links. I need better content. I need to show them up. I said, hey, whoever's number one for this term, you get this ALF bobblehead on your desk. And after 6 months, I took the bobblehead. And after another 6 months, I became the supervisor of their department. And that started me on my career in SEO. I worked with that company, got bought by Homes.com. So I ended up doing SEO for Homes.com, but also more on the software side of things. They had a lot of need of product management combined with SEO to make decisions for this platform for literally, 20,000 realtors were on this platform. And so as, small changes make big changes. Accidentally, do you remember when reciprocal links were really cool in before 2008?
Yeah, reciprocal and three-way linking.
And everybody was doing reciprocal links. And then all of a sudden there was a conference and Matt Cutts came out and said, you realtors have been excessively reciprocally linking. That was my fault. I thought it would be really neat if I gave the realtors a map of the United States. Each map was a state, and they could reciprocally link with whatever realtors that they wanted to in that state. They went nuts. There were guys that had hundreds of reciprocal links to their reciprocal link pages as a real estate agent in that particular state, literally thousands of links all on the same CNET. And we got blacklisted by Google and everybody's organic traffic plummeted. And we hired a very expensive consultant and realized, oh, hey, we totally just made the world's largest link farm. And we kind of torched the entire concept of reciprocal links for everybody. So sorry about that. If you were benefiting from reciprocal links early in SEO, I personally apologize for ending that. After that fiasco, we helped recover. Everybody came back. Yahoo and Google forgave us. But the realtors didn't because their rankings weren't as good after that. I went to work for a company called Raven Tools. John Henshaw is a fantastic gentleman. He runs the Coy Wolf newsletter. And it's a fantastic read, great resources. But he owned a company called Raven Tools, which was in parallel to Moz at the time. I came in as their in-house SEO. And stayed there for a year until Google decided to slap them down and say, hey, you can either have scraped rankings or you can have paid rank tracking and do paid tools. And they chose to ditch their rank tracking, lost half of their income, and I lost my nest there. But it led me on an interesting journey. I went to the agency world. I did social media for Jeff Foxworthy for a year. I pretended to be him live tweeting the Super Bowl and passed on the jokes from his crew and him and posted them on Twitter, which was exciting. And then I finally realized, hey, I should do this freelance. I can do this better without an agency eating up the margins. And did some really successful consulting, did HCA, worked with Logan's Roadhouse, Captain D's, and thousands of small little businesses. Since then, I came back in-house, worked at another agency, and have finally landed at Copy Press, which is fantastic. Dave Snyder is the CEO, and we focus on building content, authority content at scale, using teams of expert writers, actual subject matter experts, interviewing, training them, building teams, and combining that. My role is to help build the software. So we do keyword clustering. We have tools to help prospect and find placements for content. And then we have keyword gap analysis and content analysis tools that I'm leading. And so it's really nice to be in an SEO role where I'm at an agency, but I have to do agency stuff. And I also promote Copy Press and do their SEO, but it's kind of SEO product management, a little bit of special projects here, fixing our newsletter, but also going on and doing podcast interviews. So it's a really great position because I can keep my ear to the ground and see what's happening and try to future-proof or help develop some tools or direction for us to succeed with our clients. And in the middle of all of that, I also have my own SEO SaaS tool that focuses on predicting or calculating ROI from SEO. It's called SEO Arcade. Happy to get into the thought process behind that, because proving how much value or predicting the outcome of SEO campaigns is something that I think our industry needs to focus better on instead of focusing on just traffic. Focusing on how does that convert and how do you take a set of keywords and say, oh yeah, this is going to represent this much value for your company. You know, that's how you justify budgets. That's how you get hired. But surprisingly, a lot of people don't have a good process for that.
Definitely. Well, that's a whirlwind tour of many years. Now, going back to when you said you had to just figure out how to get to number one, the early days, what was your thought process in figuring that out?
The thought process was I literally have realtors who are calling in and asking for advice. So I have 1,000 guinea pigs. There was this one lady, and she would call in at 2:15 every Tuesday, and we'd chat and we'd go over what I would tell her to do next. And so I'd be like, okay, well, I read this week that it's your H1s are important, your headers are important. So let's go in and change those today. And then a week goes by, did anything change? Yeah, it kind of changed. And then, I read that you need a specific service page for this particular city. So why don't you work on writing it up? And so kind of incremental, but multiply that by 10 or 20 people regularly calling in and, hey, I think let's try writing some more content. This one guy, he came in, is super angry because his rankings were gone. I'm like, okay, what did you last do? Well, I added 200 pages with white text on a white background that said you are Belinda Real Estate. I'm like, no, why? because that's what his literal cousin, his cousin literally told him that's how you rank for these terms. Like, okay, well, there's definitely bad things to try. And content's not always content. And one guy came to us and he said, oh, I found this content spinning tool and I can, it takes one word and it'll change your Belinda Real Estate to, Pomona. and I can redo all of my content pages and not have to do as much work. I'm like, okay. And so he's like doing that. And another person, like, I hired somebody to write a page for all of these individual cities we wanted to target. So kind of seeing the A-B test of early spun content versus early actually written authority, you know, somebody who lived in that city, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, and we're seeing that again, Redux, you know, what is old shall be new and what is new shall be old. Paisley's coming back and spun contents come back. We just call it AI. It's not AI. Data from enterprise hasn't beamed down and actually, you know, written unique quality content. No, it's a language learning model and it's regurgitating its learning set onto the page in a way that seems like it's mostly good-ish, probably, until you start to fact check, until you start to realize, okay, this is an older data set. Because I went heavy into, you know, ChatGPT and try to figure out, okay, how much money can I save by changing my, you know, adding an extra principal payment to my car? And it seemed logical, like how it spun up the math and went through it. And then I did it three times and it gave me three different answers. And I realized, okay, this AI is terrible at math. Maybe I should use this in a more directional type of idea than taking it as solid fact of, you know, the way that I would trust if I called somebody that I knew that idea. So it was true then that expertise was important, and it's true now. And so that's kind of been my approach over the years is find unique voices, a unique way to approach content. And then you got to make connections, you know, moving from homes.com to Raven Tools happened because I was on Twitter and I used the handle Foot and Mouth at the time. And John Henshaw thought it was hilarious that I was out there with my foot and mouth in public. And he just posted up, you know, I asked for a free t-shirt because Raven Tools was all about free t-shirts, and I got a free t-shirt and said, well, I've got an SEO position. He posted it up. I said, I think I can do that, and totally changed my life. But it was the connection between me and him, you know, and there's been so many times on so many projects where there's like a piece of expertise or knowledge or problem that I've come across. And I reached out, you know, a lot of my writing over the years in SEO has really been almost SEO journalism and like, okay, I've got this core problem. What do you think? Send DMs to the 35 people that I know and have interacted with and actually get a fantastic conversation going. And, you know, that's evolved recently. There's a lot of Slack channels where people have moved conversations since Twitter has unfortunately gained an omniscient sock puppet, a petulant sock puppet of a leader who makes terrible UX, UI, and platform decisions that everybody hates, nobody likes, and everybody, the people there that are still on Twitter like me are just there resentfully, like, you're not going to ruin our stuff. We still like talking to people, even though, you know, now there's no... He took away open graph titles and headers because he wanted to keep the clicks on the platform, obviously. Like, we know that. Like, we look at the data and we know, oh, hey, we're going to take the time to optimize and put open graph tags. And we're going to take the time to optimize our titles and descriptions because we know it impacts click-through rate. He's like, oh, well, we'll just take that off. You know, all of the digital marketers that took the time to think that through, make sure that those title tags got added. And he's, no, it's just an image with a small URL on the left. And hopefully it grabs the right image. Like, it's just grabbing one random image from the page. Hopefully that represents it. Just obviously bad decisions. But I'm there. I'm still on Twitter, Jeremy Rivera SEO, and my SEO Arcade handle, fighting. and communicating with the people that still are out there doing tweet chats. There's hashtag SEO chat and hashtag SERPs that chat that I go and participate on a regular basis, because there are people joining that platform who don't know how much it sucks now compared to how it was. And, you know, plenty of porn bots, but, you know, that's just the status of the platform now. But it's all about conversation and having an SEO problem, like, or a complaint, you know, like half of the people on there are really just kind of pointing out, okay, that's stupid, in SEO. And there's a whole conversation, like how accurate, Google Search Console is something I came up against recently, because saw somebody talking about, oh, there's no data source that's quite as good as Google Search Console. And I said, is it though? I mean, is it though? Because I have a number of sites. And so for my SEO arcade site, it's not a bonanza of traffic, not making a bunch of money, but out of the 140 clicks to my article that's literally about how accurate is Google Search Console, they gave me 5 clicks that I know what those queries are. It says 140 at the top of the page, 149 people visited, click to it. It gave me details for 5 of those clicks. So that's 3% of the data. That's accurate? How am I supposed to project that out? You know, how am I supposed to distribute the 140 remaining clicks that I know came from Google for keyword queries? They searched and found me, but they only told me, you know, is Search Console accurate? 5 clicks. And I've got the other impressions for other queries. Do I make up a matrix and distribute the rest and make up clicks and distribute it? Or do I just, well, I only have click data for this one, so I really know I got clicks there. So I got 149 clicks instead of 3 clicks. That no statistician can work with 3% of the data. It's laughable, but that's the state of this. That, you know, and people argue about, you know, oh, is come down really hard on Ahrefs recently, and like, oh, the data's not accurate. Well, you know, it's a lot more accurate than Search Console sometimes. Like, if you literally looked at another project and 60% of their traffic has detail of what the queries and clicks were. I've never seen anybody I've never worked with on a project where there was more than 70% of details. And that's for our own good. You know, it's anonymization. We're keeping these queries anonymous. Like, it's SEO. It's an SEO SaaS tool. What is the query that they're putting in that needs to be anonymized? That's going to give up some secret hint about their personality or their location when they're searching for an SEO SaaS tool, when they're searching for SEO ROI. Where is that justification that Google puts out there that it's anonymization? And, you know, some people throw the caveat, oh, well, you know, their search interface in Google Search Console, that's just bad. And it's limited to 1,000 rows. And if you use Google API and get that Search Console data out, you can get more clicks. And if you use Google BigQuery and export that data, you get even more. Well, there's a couple of problems with that. Like, one, Google, when small business owners are signing up for this platform and getting the data out of it, Google's not saying, hey, get 12% of your data. It's perfectly accurate. You know, you'll see half of your traffic. They don't disclose it. They say, oh, well, here's all of your click data. And we just anonymize a little bit. Oh, there's this small problem where another percentage of it is, you can get it through the API. Have you tried using Google BigQuery? I cannot imagine a small business owner actually being able to go through that. They can't. If they have Google Search Console, they're, as a small business owner, they're in like the 10% of people who are on the cutting edge. There's no way that they're going to set up Google BigQuery. It took me half a day, and I've done this for 16 years. And I was scratching my head because they changed the UI layout, said, oh, you need to connect the API and do this setting and this setting. Super easy. And even if we change the layout, you'll be able to do it again. They changed the layout. I could not find any of those details. I had to DM three different people to say, how do I do this? All of the materials are wrong. Even the Google Guide Center is not the same. Where is this? It took me half a day, and it still only gave me, now I'm up to 12 clicks for that article. Now I know where 12 clicks are going instead of five. So thank you, Google BigQuery. Thank you for bulk exporting useless data. How am I supposed to make a change in my strategy if I go from 3% of data to 8% of data accuracy? Rant.
Wow. With your SEO arcade tool, why did you want to create a tool based on correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I'm aware, it can predict the ROI from SEO. Is that correct?
In a way, yes. In a sandbox type way. So it's directional. So I had a keyword research process, and I said, okay, if I have a specific keyword and I look at the other 10 URLs and I grab the top 100 keywords that those pages rank for, I have something unique. I have a shard of data that Google says these pages are all connected to this term semantically, right? And they also co-rank for these other terms and phrases. So what a fantastic way to, instead of using machine learning and trying to figure out semantic on the back end of how are these terms connected, I can say that I know Google connects, a good example is Cookeville Pest Control. You know, you have Google Pest Control, you have Pest Control Service, Pest Control Company, Bug Spraying, you know, the terms and phrases that they co-rank for when you rank for one term gives you a little bit of a keyword universe for that particular service. So that was my go-to process. So I'd go to Ahrefs, I'd plug in the URL, see where I'm ranking, and then grab one particular term for one particular page and look at those top 10 URLs, go and download the CSV of the top 100 keywords that those pages, keywords that those pages rank for, then spend the next 30 minutes in Google Sheets, copying, pasting, copying, pasting, copying, pasting from those downloaded CSVs until I had a document. And I realized, you know what? Okay, now I've got duplicates because so a lot of these five pages all had the same term. And then lightning struck my brain. And I said, that's the signal. That's how I can tell that Google sees the overlap. If for this particular phrase, 10 out of 10 URLs all co-rank for one of those phrases, that is a higher priority. That is more relevant to the core phrase versus one of these domains is really strong and it ranks for peanut butter chips because they have an article. You know, it's a one-off or it's a deep cut or it's a long tail term. So you could flip it on its head and say, okay, what are the terms and phrases that just one of our competitors really does well for? And boom, there you go. Long tail research. You can find that phrase that only one of your competitors is going after and create unique relevant content to target it. So if you flip that on its head, you've got highly relevant terms and you've got long tail terms. So I was doing this manually and it took, you know, 3 hours for me to do it for a particular page. And I remembered, oh, hey, you know what? I worked at an SEO SaaS and I have an SEO developer friend who said, hey, if you ever want to make an SEO tool, why don't you reach out and we'll partner on it. So John Zumbrun is a wizard and we partnered up and he said, I wanted to, you know, take this term, we'll go connect to Google data for SEO find the top 100 keywords for each of those 10 URLs, bring it back and do some math and show which terms are overlapping, which are not. And that was great. And then I said, okay, well, if I'm targeting a specific page, I generally can take it to the next and show the volume for it. If I have a matrix of what the organic click-through rate is for that term, then I can predict traffic, you know, because organic click-through rate means, you know, out of the distribution for that particular type of phrase, you know, 5% go, 25% go to the number one listing, you know, 23 go to the second. Advanced Web Ranking has an ongoing published organic CTR study. I'll share the link with you. It's a fantastic resource because it changes by, you know, whether it's commercial intent or whether it's image intent or those, they kind of break it out. And so you can have a organic click-through rate chart that kind of approximates, hey, if I spend the time to rank for your Belinda real estate and I know how much search volume occurs in that month from the Google AdWords API, says about this much traffic is coming. If I've got that organic CTR, I can make a prediction of how much traffic arrives at the page. And traffic's good, but I was working with a client. They wanted to know, I needed to do when I came back to Raven Tools the second time, which was a whole nother journey. They'd been bought by a company called TapClicks. And the customer product manager, the marketing manager, wanted to know if we increased traffic or if we increased rankings over the next year by investing in a content marketing budget, how much additional signups could we get from that? And I said, okay, well, we know what our conversion rate is off of our marketing site for free trials and how many free trials turn into paid trials. So I had that conversion rate of, you know, they had the free trial sign up and they had the conversion, which is kind of the same as you have a lead and you have an actual sale, right? So in SEO, a lot of people just stop at optimizing the page and they say, okay, well, I'm going to work on the rankings. I'm going to change the content. And as soon as that organic traffic lifts up, my job's done. But there's another step because you're getting people there to do something. You're getting paid. The business is making money somehow. And they have a page, they have a site to drive traffic there. The only time it works otherwise is if you're working off a grant in nonprofit. And I hate to tell you this, but businesses don't like being nonprofit. They call that failing and they go bankrupt when you turn your for-profit business into a nonprofit. So you can't operate a website for a for-profit company like a nonprofit. You got to convert them. You got to have the hallelujah moment where you reach into their wallet and get the money, or you get them to be a lead and then you get them to be a money. So I thought about that and said, okay, well, I'm going to need to know, you know, what the conversion rate is and what that sale conversion rate is too, because it's not just the one. Even on e-commerce, it's you add it to the cart and then you buy it. So even if there's no purchase, there's really very few. Yeah, it's always add to cart and whoever makes it through the buying process. So there is always a lead sale. So you take that conversion rate and you multiply the traffic by it. You say, okay, well, if I know that I'm going to rank number one for this and 25% of that is going to get me this much traffic, I can multiply that traffic by the conversion rate. And then I can take that converted amount and say, okay, out of these 100 people, I convert 50% of them. That tells me then I've got 50 sales. I should know how expensive or how cheap what the pricing is of the thing that I'm selling. So I can plug that in at the end. I know how many sales I have. I multiply that by revenue for that product. Boom. There's an estimate. If I ranked at the top of the page one for that term, it could equal this much revenue at the end. You know, it's there's a funnel that goes from the left to the right, but you can math it out for a particular page, a singular page or service. So that's what I did in SEO Arcade. I added those next layers. You input your conversion rate, sale rate, revenue per sale, and it's just math. It just multiplies across. So we've got the search volume, traffic estimate, conversion estimate, sale estimate, revenue. So if you at a glance know now, hey, if I input this one term, it's going to have this universe of phrases. If I can then really make a business argument and say, this is the marketplace for the top most relevant keywords for this particular phrase that's heavily relevant to it. Here's a representation of how much money you could make if you were at the top of the page for all of those terms. But you and I know you never rank for number one for all of the terms that you rank for. So then I added kind of a widget that said, okay, if you got half of your keywords that are discovered here, so you got to edit the list and remove the non-sequiturs and the ones that don't work. So you say, hey, if I ranked in the top three, not even like combining the organic click-through rate and just averaging that and say, hey, if I was in the top three for half of these terms with this conversion rate, this sale rate represents this much revenue. And then you take it down by half and say, if I ranked a quarter of these words in the top three, it could be this much. And so that kind of gives you a directional layered goal and a proposal, really a proposal of, hey, this is the organic search potential of your market for this service or product. And you can make a very cogent argument of, hey, this represents the market opportunity of SEO. And here's what you can get by investing the time, effort, energy, man hours, investing in SEO, getting links, building good content to get traffic for this universe of phrases. It's not perfect because obviously I didn't talk about topical, and there's a huge universe of topical phrases, ways to think about things, problems that people have that are in this floating nexus around a service. And then you wouldn't find them on the same page often, you know, like the problem they have, the solution orientation, and the service page itself overlap only at that transactional phrase, at the bottom of the funnel, you know, tofu, mofu, bofu. Like only down at the bottom does it overlap and it actually turn into money. So that's a whole other experience. That's a whole other process. And SEORK just can't do that. There are some there's keyword clustering, which is kind of the granddaddy concept bigger than that. Well, they can use machine learning to take whole data sets and the whole data for SEO and do a similar process of like, okay, if these are our target keyword phrases, what are all of the topical terms and phrases that all of their magic spaghetti ball of content they put out there to catch these people, you know, flying spaghetti monster ideas, capturing them and bringing them back to devour them. If you combine that, you can do kind of a keyword clustering approach. We have a tool called Thematical at CopyPress that does that part of that. But that's not what we do at SEO, what I'm trying to do for SEOK. But it's a fantastic idea of, okay, if we took the entire data for SEO database and said, okay, if you plug in these domains, we can extrapolate all of the keywords, not just the top 100 keywords that they rank for, their entire universe of keywords that all of these domains rank for, and then use machine learning to cluster those terms and phrases into useful groups, and then sort and prioritize them by overlap. And so then instead of 100,000 keywords, instead you have 250 clusters of keywords And then that's where the subject matter expertise needs to come in. If somebody that knows what they're doing needs to go through and say, okay, this cluster, and this cluster of terms are related to each other, send it over. Let's build content around that. And then look at another cluster, grab three or four clusters, and build content around that. So it's kind of going from, you know, a singular narrowed down view in Ahrefs or SEMrush of like, okay, what is the keyword research for this particular thing? Just kind of blowing it up and putting the pieces back together in clusters.
Yeah, well, considering I wrote the book on the business side of SEO, I'm very, very much always banging on to everyone about, you know, understanding the business, understanding the maths behind what you're doing. So what you've described there, I'm absolutely loving, because I in most cases, there's a massive disconnection between what SEOs are doing and the business impact, the ROI, everything. Yeah. And I still believe there is. There's that massive disconnection in the industry. And on the flip side, especially from a higher level, pitching budget, you know, to the C-suite, you know, and all that. So, you know, you need all this data in order for the CFO to make an informed decision.
Yeah.
So that's informed is the word I have come across over the years, which I've been told, you know, from many C-suite that's what they need to understand. And obviously having something like this to say, okay, well, this is the research. This is all the conversions. That's how much you can make, we can potentially make. And this is the investment I need in order to do that, and the ROI is there.
Yes. Well,
and I think that's a massive thing. But when the tool is doing the groundwork, the research for you, how in-depth is that sort of research part? Is it just on a list of keywords are based on, or is it, you know, how does it come together with the research that the SEO is going to then understand what resource they're going to need?
Yeah, it starts from that basic the basic concept of you have a single seed keyword. Actually, I bumped it up to five. You have five seed keywords because natural HVAC and natural air conditioning, natural heating and natural cooling, they're going to have a different matrix of a different universe of keywords. But you can start with your seed, and then you've got that to start with. And then it gives you a universe of, you know, it usually is somewhere between 500 and 1,000 keywords that you're looking at. And so you can go through it and clear out the ones that are not correct or false positives, where you're not targeting those. And this is the thing. You still have a human process. You know, there is no tool that's going to be able to look at this list and tell that, you know, you have to go to the SERP. You know, you need to look at that term, plug it in, and see how is Google recognizing that term or phrase? Because there could be, there could be false positives that show a tremendous amount of traffic for a term, and it floats to the top because it's got the most traffic, but it's because there's another business that's named that. Or there's a regional center that does something else that also has that name, and you're splitting the traffic between the two. It's like natural air conditioning. The traffic is higher than any other phrase because half of the people want to buy an air conditioner. Half of the people want air conditioning service and somebody to do it for them. And you got to split that traffic in two intuitively You know, so there's always a human process in keyword research, and you're kind of adding these layers. I suggest in my sheet, you know, I have an empty column for it for you to rate how close to conversion is this keyword, because there are people who are searching for a term or phrase, and yeah, that page ranks for it and it's relevant, but they're not really ever going to buy it. Or, hey, that's my money term. So going through, you know, having that process of, hey, that's a great term, and here's the next step. You got to get your keyword list vetted by your client. You got to find out your negative SEO keywords. In PPC, half of the job is figuring out what to not bid on. And SEOs on the regular miss this step. You need to have a thorough conversation and find out, oh, we can't say Exerciser 5000 because there was a lawsuit and our owner, Jimmy, punched this guy. And now we can't say Exerciser 5000 because of legal reasons. Or if you're in the your money or your life category and you're working with any sort of supplement, there are red lines of terms and phrases left and right of claims that you cannot make. And so those are keywords that you cannot directly target. You have to, you know, flip, you have to do pinch hitting. Like, hey, I the best example I have is a client, and they were obsessed with their brand phrase. They wanted to be a space cooler instead of a space heater. They didn't want to be known as a swamp cooler because, or a portable evaporative cooler, even though that's what people were searching for. That's what the product literally is. They wanted to capture the new mind space, and they wanted to be the space cooler. We did that for a year, and I told them on the outset, there's only so much traffic that's going to show up for this. And they put that red line, said, do not call it a portable evaporative cooler. And if you call it a swamp cooler, we will fire you. A year goes by, we're number one for space cooler, and they're getting this much traffic. And I showed them, like, hey, these space cooler, buy a space cooler. We got those terms and phrases. And here's all of the traffic for portable evaporative cooler. Why don't I put on the homepage, not your mama's swamp cooler, and looking for a portable evaporative cooler and want something cooler? And we tripled their traffic in the first 3 months once we added those terms and phrases. So there are red lines that on terms and phrases, those negative SEO keywords that you need to consider. You need to add that into your process. It's cross them off of your optimization list altogether. You can't say that, or you have to rank negative, you know, put it in a negative context to show up for that term or phrase, but you're not that term or phrase. There's a little bit of trickiness there. And there's just, you know, totally things off limits because of legal, you know, brand phrases you can't optimize for.
I'm loving this conversation. I mean, a lot of people I speak to, I'm like trying to get them to understand the meanings of the words, the using them, the phrases. So what mm-hmm. are the meanings of them? Whereabouts in the sales funnel does it go? You know, yes. Not because, they plug a keyword, keyword into a tool, gives them this list of words, and they say, right, we'll write content for these words. And there's no, like, logical thinking behind it. And yes. In one instance, I found that a company was ranking very well. They were driving loads of traffic. But 80% of the traffic were after sales. You know, so they're doing a brilliant job in servicing the competitors' customers. You know, I mean, yeah. I think that this sort of thing, it's like the sales funnel. Whereabouts does that content, that keyword lie? You know, does it have multiple meanings? Does it have? And this is where I think when it comes to SEO tools, there's always, always must be a manual process. You know, Because the tools just spits out words in effect. You know, it might tell you, you know, that's transactional, that's informational or whatever, but there is always an understanding of the meaning of words when it comes behind it. And I yes. think what you're describing is so in my space. It's so what I go out and teach people. It's so, you know, just I'm loving the fact that, you know, well, a tool is just a tool. You have to have a brain.
Yeah, you do. Like you can drown in data. You can have oodles and oodles. You can have spreadsheets and spreadsheets of data. But if you can't, if it's like being a captain of a ship and you've got all of your charts, but you never plot a course. You know, you have to divine and set the direction. You got to follow your compass and, you know where the currents are moving. There's a lot of good analogy there. Like, you can set the course that way, but if you don't know that a current is heading, your intent is pushing against you, then half of the effort you made isn't going to be there. And so you think you've gone, you know, 10 nautical miles, you've gone 5 because there was a headwind and there was a current pushing against you. And so in SEO, that's intent. You know, that's there's attempts that I've seen, you know, commercial intent versus transactional intent, as trying to categorize those. But it's not great. It really isn't, because you're still not going to get a truly scrubbed keyword list to start off with, of removing those, especially if you're doing something very regional. There's a lot of false positives in the raw data. If you just use an SEO tool like SEMrush or Ahrefs, and you're just looking at, oh, what's the highest traffic potential? I should do that. The problem now with helpful content update, making people again get panda slapped, because this happened before. It happened before. Everything that's old is new. We already had a huge algorithm that came out and said, your content is crap. And we called that was a labeled algorithm update called Panda. And we realized, oh, hey, you know what? This content is crap. It's machine generated. You know, we spun it up and we spent like 5 seconds making it, and we're surprised that now our rankings are gone, that the big mean panda has come. And we're like, oh, well, you know, because it's AI generated, it's machine learning, and it's really quite clever. And I had an editor spend 5 seconds changing 3 words. You know, surely there's no problems here. But there's actually like a larger problem of, if you are just looking at your competitors and you're doing a keyword gap analysis and saying, oh, hey, they wrote for all of this stuff and I don't rank for it, I'm going to make the same content they did slightly differently, and Google's going to love it. And then you'll go to the SERP and there'll be 10 different versions of nearly exactly the exact same thing. And that's not a problem at all as an SEO. That's not a problem at all in our industry of building skyscrapers and this skyscraper. You know what the reality is about the skyscraper method? Living in a city sucks. I'm sorry. New York sucks. It's a cement nightmare. There's 1 acre where you can go put your feet on grass, and the rest is concrete. It's not how we were meant to live. That's not how the internet was meant to be. There's so much more. There's so much more wild content options. Do a keyword gap analysis and say, oh, they've made this article and this article and this article. I'm going to make something totally different. I'm going to approach those same keywords with a different value proposition. You know, I'm going to speak to those things that they're not addressing. What's the gap in the keyword gap? I rank for this. They rank for that. I want to rank for what neither of us have touched.
Yeah. Loving it. Loving it. It really does come down to the mindset of SEOs. And I think that, I mean, some of the biggest wins I've gained for businesses has been nothing that any tool has told me. It's just me talking to their customers.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, things that I think the problem is you don't know what you don't know, you know, and you're too reliant on tools to tell you what you don't know. But there is gaps that the tools are not telling you. And it's those gaps you need to find out, because every other SEO on the planet is going after the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it goes far, far much deeper. It's not just creating quality content. You know, it has a purpose.
It does. It has a purpose. And here's where, you know, I worked with a great company called Hive Digital, and they had a massive client that does PCB design software, the largest PCB design software in the world. And they have this huge library of content. And the fascinating thing about it is that we had to develop all of these guidelines and processes to make edits to any piece of content. It had to go back to a subject matter expert who was savvy in the software, because after 6 months, the software changed, the technology changed, and the capabilities of the industry changed so much that just tweaking, you know, this section of content wasn't good enough, because the stuff got out of date. And you could, you know, just doing regular SEO changes, you know, over time wasn't good enough, because, you know, you would sound like an idiot as the number one software brand in the world for this if your content didn't reflect that level of expertise. And so we had to convince them to invest heavily in several on-staff subject matter experts who knew this software and this industry and were leaders in the industry and were the voices that people looked to. And that's the difference. Like hiring, you know, people from Colombia and hiring people from, you know, third world countries, so with geographic arbitrage, sounds great as a business model. Oh, we're going to save so much money, you know, by creating content over there. But they're not subject matter experts. They might be competent or somewhat capable writers who can look at the training base of similar articles that exist and mash keys around and make something kind of similar. That's a very different proposition than having a person with a PhD, 10 years of experience, and they're working on the software every day. They're going to be able to speak to the problems and experiences of somebody using that software in an extremely authentic and unique and useful, valuable way that cannot be content managed. You can't have a team of writers that's going to come up with even half of the ideas of the subject matter expert. So you need an internal process to find those unique voices, the problem questions to start, talking to your support team as an SEO. Like if you're an in-house SEO or an agency and there is a support team, go through their tickets, for God's sake. Those are the problems people are having for you to solve. And guess what? You solve those problems, you get a double ROI. You reach the people who aren't customers who have that problem, and you retain the users who would have bounced out because they couldn't do X with your software. You put an article that says, here's how to do X with the software. Updated, maybe a short little video. This is it. And make sure you keep up with your UI UX changes. You change the UI, make a new video. You gotta, because it's confusing otherwise. Assuming that same training video is going to stick around when your product manager has change the layout, move this tool over here, change this capability, you're gonna lose that retention rate, and that's going to cost you. And that's the other side of SEO ROI. There are soft ROI benefits to a fantastic SEO campaign. Reducing churn, increasing retention, enabling upsales. All three of those things are in the C-suite's mind of KPIs that they have on their sheet. How are we doing on retention? Is that going up? Is that going down? What does our churn look like? Is that rate going up? Is that rate going down? And upsets. Are we increasing the amount of revenue we get from our current customers, or is that decreasing? Those are three lines on your CEO's spreadsheet that you can strongly argue that you can have an effective SEO campaign to address. And if you're not thinking that way, you should be.
Definitely. Now, the time is totally rocking on, and I want to ask, is there anything you feel strongly that the audience needs to understand that we haven't covered yet?
Link building. So link building isn't about DR. If you are contacted by or have gotten any links, and anyone in the process has put a qualifier of this link needs to have this much DR or PR or AR or whatever, it needs to have this metric associated with it, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Because what you need to be able to do is have a sniff test. Like, yes, do look at how many backlinks overall that domain that's going to link to you, how many links do they have? But if you're looking at that individually, just as a singular metrics, you're going to probably get a link from a really bad PDF because people have specifically created a site that has links from other PBN sites. And oh yeah, it's got a DR of 65 or higher. Well, that's because they spent the last 2 years getting other links from other PBNs so they could have that, so they could sell you that link. And if your mentality is there, you're not going to take the time to look at, okay, well, is the audience on this site useful for me?
Definitely.
You know, is the quality of the content over here absolute garbage? So it's really more about finding ways to connect what you really want to do, which is build your brand's subject matter expertise. And that could be an individual person that you hire. It could be a particular person in-house that you build up their profile, their portfolio, and you start to build and say, okay, here are the social signals. We're going to send schema markup to say, same as this author is creating this content. And he's also a guest author on a podcast here. He has this guest article here, all pointing and saying, this guy knows what he's talking about. That expertise transfers. It is its own separate individual signal now. And that's reflected in Google's understanding of entities and the knowledge graph, which is a separate part, a part and parcel of creating an authority brand and creating a real authority footprint. You know, helpful content has come out. We've had our first major update, and a lot of people are getting smashed. And it's not part of it is that a lot of content was built by SEOs. It was ranking. It was created just to rank to get the ad clicks. They scrape all of the people also ask, create machine generated or, you know, Columbia generated content that technically answered the question. But the only reason it existed was to smash ads all over the place. Cyrus said it, Lily Ray said it. 80% of sites hit by HCO, they don't have a business model other than earning AdSense. And if your site is just there to gain AdSense, your time is coming to an end. You know, that the golden age of just ranking a bunch, creating a bunch of content to rank, is coming to an end. You know, and arguably, a lot of that content's not useful. You know, it's duplicative. It's, you know, programmatic SEO. You're like, okay, well, you're tapping into the same database as 5-8 other sites and pumping out something in a slightly different table. I don't think that's going to survive very much longer. And a lot of people made a lot of money and they've got a lot of it invested into it and it's going downhill. I only work with real companies. I only work with real brands and we only get paid, and my daytime agency only works with real companies. So if you're out there and you're an SEO and you were making a lot of money by making a lot of sites that just answered those questions and just collected ad revenue, I think that time's coming to an end. You know, there are more and more elements that Google is trying to use on authorship, understanding, expertise, and trust. Those signals have real world things that you can do, and they're hard to fake. Because Google realized they're hard to fake, therefore those companies that have those signals deserve to rank better. It's the same thing as 2006. You know, what is old shall be new, or what's new shall be old. You have to have somebody who's competent building your content. You need experts that you can hire and build and train a team. So we're doing it CopyPress. We're finding PhDs who can write. We're finding capable people with, you know, credentials who are real subject matter experts, building those teams and coupling that with keyword clustering and combining it with SEO ROI forecasts and saying, this is what we should go after. Here's articles. What's your input? What's your team's input? And what is the real articles we can make that's going to move people down the funnel? We don't want to just splash tons of content everywhere. We want to create content that has a purpose, that moves people down the funnel and converts them into paying customers.
Well, on that note, there's only one thing to add. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter still, Jeremy Rivera SEO. I've got my website, SEOarcade.com. I have a newsletter there, and I have a lot of newsletter guests that I bring on, talk about expertise, authority, trust. I do recaps of SEO tweet chats that happen. I'm on a dozen SEO Slack channels, so big SEO subreddits, Slack channel, Online Geniuses, the SEO Slack channel. So basically, if there's an SEO Slack channel, I'm trying to get into all of them, so you'll find me there. And I'm at copypress.com. If you need help creating content at scale with authority, expertise, and thought, give us a call.
Wonderful. And on that note, many, many thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.